There's Miss Maravilia. Good evening.
Hi, guys. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Happy New Year.
Thank you.
At this point, I'm just going to wait for the green light or the tag I'm at. It is 6 o'clock.
All right, sir. We're ready for you.
Okay, thank you. Good evening, everybody. It is 6 o'clock on Tuesday, January 5th. I am calling to order the Planning Commission meeting for today, January 5th, at 6 o'clock. May we have a roll call, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shira?
Here.
Commissioner Maravilia?
Here.
Commissioner Sage?
Here.
And then tonight, Commissioner Montes is absent.
Very good. Thank you very much. May we all stand for the salute to the flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag.
To the flag.
United States of America. To the Republic for which it stands. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. We have a short agenda tonight. If anybody, my fellow commissioners, like to have any changes you made or any review of the agenda for tonight's meeting? Seeing none, I think we will proceed. Do we have anybody from the community, Patrick, that is logged in, that is interested in making any comments on items not on the agenda?
You're muted.
Patrick, you're muted.
Sorry about that. I'm going to let the host of the meeting here handle the public comment.
Okay.
So we've got a couple people in the attendees queue.
Okay. I'll go through this as just a matter of protocol. Going to open to the public the comment period as an invitation of members of the community to present issues, thoughts, or suggestions on matters not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Comments should be limited to those matters that are within the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission. The members of the public may provide a comment remotely by joining the joint Zoom meeting and using one of the methods provided herein. If there's anyone from the community that would like to participate at this point and make comments on items not on the agenda, please feel free to use the raise hand feature to indicate your desire to provide public comment. Are we aware of anybody at this point?
Mr. Chair, there are no raised hands.
Very good. Thank you very much. Then I will proceed on so I'm closing the public comment period for items not on the agenda tonight. The next item on the agenda is any written communications. I know that I have received a couple of items from staff. Are there any additional items or late items that have arrived for our review tonight that were not included in the submissions from staff already today?
Jump in here. This is
yes,
McDonald. I don't believe we have received any other correspondence aside from what has been sent out as supplemental memos, and those appear on our website on this agenda item under item 8A. There were two supplemental memos provided, and
correct,
they're available for the public as well. As far as I'm aware, I don't believe we've received any other comments or written communications.
Yeah, I have not received anything directly, I'm assuming. The fellow commissioners have not either. Okay, the next item is the consent agenda item. We have only one item on here. It is to approve the minutes of the November 17th, 2020 regular planning commission. I will move that we approve those minutes. Is there a second? And then after that, we'll have any conversation if need be.
I'll second that.
Okay, I have it seconded by Mr. Sage, Commissioner Sage. Anybody have any comments or revisions that they want to make to those minutes at this time? Hearing none, seeing none. Do we have a roll call vote on this item, please?
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shira?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilia?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sage?
Yes.
Very good, thank you. now to the item 8A, which is the public hearing item. It's the single item that we have on our agenda tonight. It is consideration of General Plan Amendment 19002, the housing element update, and the addendum to the General Plan EIR. Do we have a report from staff on this item to highlight that and refresh us with this project in process? Mr. Perez.
Yeah, good evening, commissioners. I have a presentation for us. Hold on up here. Commissioners, members of the public, I'll be making a brief presentation tonight about the consideration of a recommendation to adopt the City of Arroyo Grande's housing element update. Quick review of what the housing element is and what it does. The housing element is one of eight elements that must be included in a city's general plan. It is the only element that is reviewed and certified by the state, and that is done by the Department of Housing and Community Development. This department also sets the schedule for housing element updates, and the City of Arroyo Grande is currently on our sixth cycle, which covers the planning period of 2020 through 2028. Housing element consists of a review of the current housing element. It updates existing conditions and information about the city's housing, resident, and housing regulations, provides an analysis of potential constraints to housing production, provides inventory and analysis of adequate sites for housing, and also provides housing policies, programs, and quantitative objectives. So we last discussed the housing element update on October 6th at a study session. So the aspects of staff's presentation about the housing element included information about the regional housing needs allocation of 692 units, state housing legislation that affected housing policies, programs, and goals, and also outlined programs and policies that were new to this edition of the housing element. That evening, we received comments from the commission and the public, and those comments were addressed and included in the addition of the housing element that's been distributed for tonight's meeting. So we got a lot of good feedback during the study session. And we were able to boil those comments down to four main areas. The first being there was a desire to see missing middle housing types addressed in the housing element. We heard encouragement to incorporate policies that require or encourage inclusion of child care facilities in multifamily housing projects. We heard the desire to streamline approvals for housing projects, and also heard a concern with the reliance on accessory dwelling units to meet the city's regional housing needs allocation. So a summary of all the comments heard at the study session and responses to those comments can be found on pages 3 through 12 of the current draft. But this evening, we're going to focus on those four main comment areas that I just went over. So with regards to missing middle housing types, policy 8.15 was added to examine and revise the development code to enable the types of housing that serve missing middle housing types and households. You'll notice that this policy was added without an attached program, mainly because it's difficult to predict what actions are going to be needed to support this policy. It also gives the city some flexibility to ensure that we do pursue this policy and see that it's carried out. However, I would direct your attention to program F.1-4 that calls for the adoption of objective design standards, which are anticipated to produce housing types that meet this missing middle in our community. The objective design guidelines will reduce uncertainty and risk associated with housing projects, and encourages redevelopment of smaller parcels that tend to produce these housing types. Staff heard the concern for the lack of child care facilities, and in response to that, policies 5.7 and 5.8 were added to the housing element, which encouraged child care facilities in both residential projects and larger commercial and industrial projects, whereas policy 5.8 encourages projects that promote energy generational uses and activities. That evening, we heard the commission's desire to accelerate housing review. So again, I'll direct your attention to program F.1-4. By adopting objective design standards, the subjectivity and discretion in some effect is removed from the review process, thereby decreasing review times and accelerating housing production. Finally, there is concern expressed by both the commission and the public during the study session that the city's housing projections were too reliant on accessory dwelling units. So in the draft report tonight, the number of ADUs projected during the planning period was reduced from 350 down to 236. Your staff arrived at the 236 unit number by using ADU data from our building permits in 2019 and 2020 and extrapolated that over the planning period to get to that number. To account for the 114 units that were reduced off the ADUs, we re-examined our site inventory and identified sites as opportunity sites for redevelopment and infill to make up for those 114 units. So following the study session on October 6th, staff and our housing consultant made the requested revisions to the housing element, and that was submitted to HCD seeking conditional certification. We heard back from HCD on November 23rd, and they had multiple comments, but boiled down to these 4 points here. They asked us to revise program 8.10-2 to include other mixed-use zones, revise program F.1-2 to reduce permit requirements for multifamily residential projects. They asked that we add a program to eliminate the subjectivity in our design review standards and add a program to establish an official process to implement Senate Bill 1087. So I'll quickly go into detail about each of these revisions and how we accommodated HCD's requests. So program 8.10-2 allows increased density and lower permit requirements for housing projects in the office mixed-use zone. This program was expanded to include the Fair Oaks mixed-use district as well as the Gateway mixed-use district. And the inclusion of these zones just makes more land available for housing production with a lower permit threshold, which eliminates what was considered a governmental constraint to housing production. Program F.1-2 is also seen as a governmental constraint. So in order to appease the state, the previous iteration of this program established a threshold whether a project required a minor use permit or a conditional use permit, just based on the number of units that were proposed in the project. The program was revised to allow the state some flexibility to lower those permit thresholds in order to generate housing production and make that easier for an applicant. While there's not a specific program or item to implement this, there are examples listed under program F.1-2 that we can discuss in further if the commission so desires. HCD asks that we eliminate the subjectivity in our design review standards, and to do that, we refer them to program F.1-4, and again, the objective design standards that will remove that subjectivity and streamline housing review times. Program F.1-5 was added to establish process to implement SB 1087. And we also made minor edits and clarifications throughout the document as requested, but nothing that raises the level of much concern for the commission. So having made those changes on December 10th, the State Department of HCD granted conditional certification for the housing element update. And the housing element update is subject to environmental review pursuant to the California Environmental Quality Act. It was determined that the best path forward to comply with the CEQA was to prepare an addendum to the general plan EIR. The addendum was prepared to document the reliance on that EIR for this update because the housing element is merely a policy document and does not result in the direct change to the environment. The general plan EIR already considers potential impacts from projects because projects are required to be consistent with the general plan. The housing element update is not anticipated to create new or significant impacts that have not been previously accounted for in that general plan EIR. The schedule should look familiar. Arriving at the end of it, so tonight we're looking for a recommendation from commission, and staff recommends that the Planning Commission make a recommendation to City Council to adopt the draft with minor revisions that were generated in response to public comment letters received this week. Those two revisions are very minor. Program A.2-1, the quantitative or quantified objective for this program was inconsistent with Table 4.5 regarding the number of ADUs that projected. So it's just a cleanup item. And staff will expand Section 1.4 with regards to the public participation in the housing element production to include that staff did seek input from 10 Native American tribes, sent public hearing notices to 11 local nonprofit organizations to seek input, and did participate in the Regional Housing Summit to raise awareness of this effort to update our housing element. So with that, that concludes staff's presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions should the commission have any. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Perez. I'm assuming there may be some questions or comments. Let's start with questions. Commissioner Shiro, do you have questions of staff that you'd like to ask them for clarification on this? You just muted yourself.
I have one. So as far as the general plan EIR, was the original general plan EIR, did it have the original numbers that we, our arena numbers changed dramatically? So had we already updated the general plan EIR? Because it seems like a significant impact when you go from, I think we had, what we have, 100, and I'm just roughing it, 170 some at one point, and now we're up to 6 something. How was that computed in the calculation of significant or not significant impact?
Very good question, Commissioner Shiro. I'm going to actually defer this question to our housing consultant, Amy Sinsheimer, who will assist.
Hi, good evening, members of the commission and chair, Amy Sinsheimer from PlaceWorks. I can pull up the addendum to answer more specifically, but my understanding is that the numbers for the RENA were within the overall build-out associated with the general plan, so therefore they didn't increase impacts. And I will pull that document up right now as well.
Very good, thank you. Anything else, Mr. Shara, at this point?
Yeah, overall, the comments by gentleman Mr. Navarette from the 44 pages, just to be honest, when I first read this staff report, I thought it was extremely thorough. do know, just from trying to follow myself, the amount of state housing legislation in the last 3 years, and to think about our staff having to try to digest that and to get it all right. And obviously Amy's been involved in that. It's a daunting task. But I just want to note, overall, his specific comments, do we, even though we've received conditional approval from the state, does staff feel like there's any additional comments that were in those 44 pages that also need to be addressed?
Perhaps I can jump in. This is Whitney McDonald. We did look really closely at those letters that we received very recently. Just a minor point of clarification, they were transmitted to us from Mr. Navarrete from HCD, but the letters, there were two of them. One came from an organization called NIMBY Law, and the other one was from an individual, Ann Paulson. And we did look through those very closely, and determined that, as you mentioned, HCD has already provided a conditional certification of the draft that is presented to you all for consideration this evening. They did look very, very closely and thoroughly at the draft that we submitted to them. They had a number of comments and suggested revisions, and we did incorporate them, and Andrew's done a great job summarizing those for you all as well. And so based on HCD's review, you know, we feel confident that what we've presented is compliant with the requirements and strikes that balance that we all have to do in looking at these kinds of long-range planning documents. The items that the several many items in those long letters raise points that, to me, I interpret more as a difference of opinion about how far things maybe could have gone, or the level of detail that somebody may have hoped us to look at, but they seem to kind of lead toward a desire for an exact science when that's not really what we're able to provide here.
Sure.
And so we do have a conditional certification, which essentially says that if we do go forward and adopt the element that's presented to you this evening, and if council does move forward with that as well, that we have an indication that HCD is likely to find it compliant and be able to certify it. They still have an additional review period that happens after adoption by the city council, and so I think there's a theoretical possibility that if there's an issue in this letter that they agree with, they may need to come back to us. But at this point, based on our independent review, and we did confer with our city attorney as well, he agreed that we think what we have before you now is a really solid, good document. And so we're recommending moving forward with it.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Sage, you have questions of staff at this point?
Well, I believe Amy has some information to provide the plan.
Yeah, I just confirmed what I said earlier. I looked back at the addendum, and indeed the numbers that are analyzed for the RENA numbers in this current housing element are within that envelope of your build-out that is analyzed in your general plan EIR. So there are no additional impacts associated with those numbers.
Very good. Thank you very much. Do you have any other questions, Mr. Sage?
Actually, just a couple of comments. First of all, I want to let staff know that I really appreciate the format, especially of this particular report. And I'm targeting the area where we're identifying the issues clearly that have been brought to the state and your response to those. I find that very valuable in trying to understand where we're going and why we're doing it and how we're going to get there. So the format seemed to me to be extremely good for this particular
happy to. So for the housing element, and there are different state and federal laws that use the term special needs, but for the housing element, there are certain subgroups of your community that we analyze in terms of background information and then include policies and programs for. And one of those is seniors. So that's where the intergenerational piece of that would fit. And then another is single parents, and they tend to have additional needs because having only one parent in the household, lower income often, and also additional needs for childcare. So that's another special needs group that that would address.
Thank you. I didn't realize that it was a senior citizen, not a special needs professional.
Yeah, you know, it's the special needs groups, they all include some folks who have special needs related to housing and things related to housing like childcare, and of course some folks who are not in need, but statistically, you know, a lot of seniors have lower incomes and disabilities more so than other parts of the population. So that's why.
So, let's see, the other item, I will sort of echo a little bit Commissioner Tyrell's comments. When I read the two reports that we received today, I was quite concerned. I did sort of two levels of reading. I skipped through the one from the law firm first, and my concern was there's an awful lot of items that they went through and sort of nitpicked and very important. I would consider implementation programs rather than planning programs. So I sort of interpreted that what would be that approach a little differently, but I also did find that as I went through it a second time, there did appear to be some actual discrepancies from the writer's point of view and what we have in our report. And in particular, I think the there were several items pointed out that were the writer considered incorrect calculation for math. And I want to make sure that those were re-looked at and that, you know, we're good on the math, because the math is what got the mystery confusion. And if the math is incorrect, perhaps the conclusion is incorrect. So I do want to make sure that those have been reviewed carefully. Other than that, the idea that have reviewed in detail both of those reports and feel comfortable that we still will meet the state requirements. That's that's the feedback, and I'm glad to hear that. Other than that, I think that's the comments and the questions I have. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much, Commissioner Sage. Commissioner Maravilla, do you have questions for staff at this time?
I do. I just have a couple more detailed questions of things in the element. So in the actual staff report, which is item 8A, page 4 of the packet, which thank you for that, by the way. I like the way you guys numbered things. It was really easy to find things in this packet. It said that the staff conducted additional analysis to identify any additional sites that were added to the land inventory table that were previously unaccounted for, and these sites are not likely to result in high density or affordable units. Can you guys explain why? Do you need help finding where it is? Kind of top of the page.
Yeah, why don't you give them that reference point again just to help.
Yeah, so in the actual, in the staff report part of the packet, so it says item 8A, page 4 on the bottom of the page, and it's right before, it's like a couple sentences before the table 4 or 5 in that report.
Okay.
respond if you would like me to. So,
please go ahead, yes.
So these are all sites that are non-vacant, and I believe all of them were included in your previous housing element. They are all included as either moderate or above moderate sites, meaning that they would most likely address those income categories. Some of them could develop as affordable housing, but when we're looking at the analysis for the housing element, the thresholds and criteria that the state is looking for a site to be included to meet the lower income RENA categories, which, in other words, addressing the more affordable housing need, is very rigorous. So there was something about these sites that made them not rise to that threshold compared to the sites that were included in those categories. And part of that is the likelihood that they will redevelop as high-density housing before 2028. And we felt much more confident that the sites that were included for the lower income category met that standard. So that is why the staff report says that, I believe. It definitely could play out differently, as is the case for almost any site in this list. But does that answer your question?
That is. Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, and then on page 12 of the housing element draft, so it's that's the like page number in the middle, and then on the right-hand side, it's item 8A, page 28 of the packet. It says there was a comment letter that came from SLOCOG after the draft was submitted. Did we do anything with the suggestions from SLOCOG within this, or was that kind of, were they not accurate, or?
So it was a fairly short letter. They actually complimented several of the things, policies and programs in the housing element, and then they asked about whether there would be additional outreach before completion of the housing element. So that was the extent of their comments.
Okay.
And I don't know if staff wants to add to that.
Okay. On page, I guess the next page, so page 13 of the draft, page 29 of the packet, in policy A.2. There are lists of incentives for the production of affordable housing. Are these the only incentives that we can offer? Or is this just a general list? Or is there a way to put in general language such as like other measures that the city may deem necessary? Is this like conclusive, or is this, you know, open for interpretation?
I'm not sure where you're referring to.
Okay, it's on page 13 of the housing element draft. A.2.
Yeah, I would just chime in and say it's, you know, this is a pretty general list.
Okay, it's meant to be general.
It's not set in stone. There's something, you know, the commission has suggestions. It's definitely, we're open to hear those. And
so if, like, 2 years from now, something comes down the road that people are like, this is a great way to get affordable housing, does that leave us open to do those type of things? Or do we need language in there? Okay. Awesome. Thank you. sorry, I'm like getting like granular. I'm sorry for that. on page 94 of the housing draft, so 94 in the middle page number, and then the one on the right hand side, it says item 8.A. page 110 of the entire packet. Sorry, it's so hard when there's two different numbers on pages. But it's about under the inclusionary housing section. And it says that most applicants have chosen to pay the in-lieu fee rather than build the affordable units. So I had two questions on this. When did the city raise the fee to the 5%? I guess that's the first question.
done as part of an update to the fee schedule at the beginning of 1920. Is that right? I think that, I'm not certain. It was either 1819 or 1920. But I think it was very recent. Yes.
Yeah, it was our latest update, which was August of 2019.
Okay. At first, I thought it was like 1920. That's
sorry, fiscal year. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah, just sort of in the middle there. Yeah.
Okay. So, and then the other part of this question, if they pay the in lieu fee, are they still given the same allowances and incentives as if they had built the affordable units?
No, they're not.
Okay.
So.
Perfect.
It's just the fee based on the construction valuation.
Okay, so that they don't get any of the other incentives.
They don't get the incentives or concessions. Like
they just pay.
Goes well. Yeah.
Okay. I think those were my only questions. So thank you for entertaining them.
Thank you very much. At this point, I'm going to open the meeting to a public comment. People are able to, I have to go back to my notes here. Is it a handshake or do something? I'm going to depend on staff to kind of help me through this process.
Yes, I can,
in the Zoom.
I can help out. If somebody from the public would like to speak, please use the raise hand function. It looks like Kevin Buchanan is first.
Okay, Mr. Buchanan, I think you're being brought into the meeting.
Mr. Buchanan, if you could unmute yourself.
Very good.
Yes, hello. You received my written comments here. I just wanted to reiterate a few things. One thing that was not brought up in the presentation that all three written correspondences mentioned was that the current housing element is not abiding by the HCD guideline to factor in a probability of development for your site inventory list, so you're almost certainly overestimating what can be built in your site inventory, which certainly affects the probability that you will meet the housing goals, as the city has not been meeting low-income and very low-income housing goals over the last cycle. This housing element doesn't significantly change much, so it stands to reason that you won't meet those goals this cycle as well. Regarding the tying of missing middle housing to program F14, I believe it is, that doesn't change the fact that that type of housing is still illegal to build in the majority of your residentially zoned land in the city. So that would certainly help bring that site inventory list into a more achievable state if we can factor in how removing certain constraints might provide more potential sites that could be built regarding the missing middle, which would apply to some low income, probably medium income as well. And that's about it. I think you all have your conditional approval, like you said. I think the HCD will likely take a second look at some things here, and I certainly think this can be improved. Those are my comments.
Very good. Thank you very much for your letter coming in, and thank you for participating tonight and your comments here tonight. Is there anyone else who's next in line?
Chair Martin, there are no more raised hands.
Okay, very good. I'm going to probably count to 10 slowly here to see if there is someone that has not yet done that, that is struggling in this computerized process in order to participate. But hearing that there are no other raised hands in order to participate, I will at this point close the public hearing aspect on the discussion on this item, return it to us here as the commissioners. I will make the motion, but before I make the motion, I'm wondering if there are any other last comments that the commissioners would like to make before that. If there are adjustments, my request is that allow the motion to be made, and then if we need to make amendments or clarify something, need to be done at that point in time. So any kind of closing comments, Mr. Mirabili, anything you want to add at this point?
Yeah, I did have some comments. I really appreciate all the hard work that was put into this. I think you guys really listened in
the October 6th session and really try to bring those elements in. I was really glad to see us reduce the number of ADUs, although I still think it's a little bit too high that we're aiming for. I'm still pretty concerned that we're not planning for enough affordable housing in Arroyo Grande. I thought one area that you guys that was in within this document was really significant. On page 9 of the draft, which is item 8A, page 35, it says, and I'm slightly paraphrasing here, the city's land use element designates sites noted in the existing housing element for residential purposes. While the existing housing element states that the designated sites are a range of densities, most of the land is zoned for single-family uses, and because of that, we will never meet that goal. And then a little further down, it states, we are building a city where the options are not feasible or desirable for young families. That line was incredibly concerning for me, and I really don't think we have enough programs put in place to address this. And I think a lot of it is probably outside of this housing element, unfortunately. I think it looks to me that our zoning and development code standards are putting significant restraints on building affordable housing in our city, and that if we are going to be building a city that is ever going to offer equitable and affordable housing options, we're going to have to take a long, hard look at these things. So I just want to, that's kind of my main comment on the whole thing, being that one of our my main goals for this housing element is to grow or to provide for what we need within this city, which is affordable housing, and we don't have it. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Sage?
I have no additional comments. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Shiro, do you have comments to make?
Yes, I do. First of all, I want to say to staff, to all who participated, since I've been on this commission, I have not seen a more detailed response to a comment session ever, and so I really appreciate that. I thought it was extremely thorough, and I want to make sure that you realize what a great job you did in that. That being said, you know, looking at the, some of the late details that of things that we missed. Or maybe not missed, but just some additional details that, as Woody McDonald stated, you know, it's open to interpretation as to how much detail is needed. I know that what I've witnessed in the last two or three years has been an incredible shift in just thought and concern for housing. From this commission, and I won't speak for everybody, but just with general comments that everybody's made over the course of time, I know that we're all extremely concerned, and we all want to do everything we can to make sure that middle that all of those. I mean, you actually look at the numbers. The number that we're most deficient in is actually even on the above affordable, you know. Moderate, you know, range, and so, we're short in everything. We know that, but we went from a shift of trying to figure out. It seemed like everybody who showed up and spoke, and even quite a few of the commissioners, were looking for ways to not have this happen because somehow it might be bad for our community and we'd be overcrowded and .. But to have all the comments one night be from, forgive me for using the YIMBY term, but that was actually the group that submitted that letter, and to have community members really concerned about it, I just think it's a phenomenal paradigm shift, and we do want to do everything we can. That being said, we obviously, you know, realizing how many laws, I've been trying to keep track of everything from the state. for the last 3 years, and it's just daunting to keep track of what they are and to think about staff having to put all of that into these documents. I mean, you're talking about so much staff time. We don't have the staff to do it in 3 weeks or in 6 weeks or in, and so I totally get how some of these you know, have to be pushed, you know, down the road as far as, okay, the timeline looks a long way away. But the reality is it's so much work. So I just want to just say that, you know, as a commissioner, I'm committed to keep track of that and to make sure that, you know, I have confidence in staff that it's going to get done. But I know it's a lot of work. I know it's daunting, but I do know, as Commissioner Maravilla said, it is totally worth it and it's totally needed. We have to do everything we can. And I would say to the people out there that are really concerned about this happening, right now the best asset you have is not in all the details in these 270 pages that we went through tonight, plus the other, you know, 100 plus pages of comment. It's the five commissioners and our city council and our staff that are committed to doing this and to making this right, because it's needed for our community. And that's my comment.
Excellent. Thank you, Mr. Shiro. I do have a couple of comments to make myself. Certainly share the other commissioners' appreciation for all the efforts that were gone in. I keep reminding myself that we're a small community in a big state, and that's all too often expectations of state political leadership to have small towns like ours complete, complex, convoluted, and some level, in my mind, an unnecessary level of detail in order to comply with some state laws. And we're in a whole range of political spectrum on this committee and in our community, but smaller government and having a smaller expectation on paperwork, I think, is something that this would benefit from. My other comments, really, the existence of this document, while is designed as a planning tool for development, does have to function in the real world. And there have been comments made, and certainly there are goals that are set, not only by the state, but, you know, regionally for us, and goals set within this document. We've had approximately a 1% population growth in our community and in the county over the last decade, and that 1% has been shrinking to the point that it was shared with me that the estimate of the city population in 2019 actually decreased by 40 people or 60 people or something. So while that may not sound like a whole lot, what we are seeing currently in the community is a very stable population, which at some level means that, gee, we don't need to build any new housing because nobody new is coming in. That's not a good way for us to do planning. That's certainly not what is expected from the state, and certainly not what this document is identifying. But the comments from the people that have, you know, called in and participated, as well as, you know, those that have actively participated in this document, we need to recognize that the real world in Arroyo Grande and the real world in San Luis Obispo, real population growth over the next probably 8 years of the umbrella under which this document is being served, is probably going to be very, very modest at best. So time will tell just how many houses get built, how many structures, and at what level. Certainly doesn't diminish the need for us to improve our efforts in providing more affordable housing and much of the missing middle. But we will, my other comment is, we need to continue our efforts to remain sensitive to our community culture while continuing addressing and confronting the housing needs across this political spectrum. And I look at this tool as literally that, as a tool, and I think that the level of detail that's in there certainly exceeds what we're really able to functionally use on a day-to-day basis in our small community. I don't want to make it sound like I'm against planning or against framework or against development and regulations and guidelines. But if this can meet the state requirements, I think that this is a great foundation to work from, and I don't see the need to start getting into the weeds and nitpicking small and minor minutiae on that. But I do believe that any document of this type is always eligible for revision, but there does come a time when it needs to be voted on, published, submitted to the state or the authorizing agency for final review, revision, and approval. In my mind, this housing element certainly qualifies for this attention, and I know staff and PlaceWorks have worked diligently to prepare this document that satisfies the state requirements, and is it apparent that the state has seen fit already to conditionally accept it? And I know that they will also receive the comments and the correspondence that we have received here today, and will certainly have the opportunity to make either revisions or make recommendations to the city should such revisions be required or recommended in order to meet the state compliance. But with that being said, I don't have any other recommendations or changes. I move that the Planning Commission approve a resolution of the City of Arroyo Grande recommending City Council approve the General Plan Amendment Number 19-002, adopting the housing element update and an addendum to the General Plan Environmental Impact Report. Entertaining a second at this time.
Second.
Seconded by Commissioner Shiro. And we have a roll call, please.
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Vice Chair Shiro?
Yes.
Commissioner Maravilla?
Yes.
And Commissioner Sage?
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you very much. I know the staff will, it's probably already been agendized for City Council. There's no doubt in my mind that City Council will see this document in the not-too-distant future for their review and approval and ultimate submission on to Sacramento. Thank you for everyone. Thank you for the public, as tough as it is in these times to participate. Your comments are looked at and reviewed and appreciated and included wherever possible. We don't have any, at this point, we have no non-public hearing items. There was just a single administrative decision that was included in our agenda here today. I'm wondering, I know that there was some public comment about that. I'm wondering if staff would just like to make any kind of brief comments concerning this particular one in order to get some clarification. I didn't call you out specifically, but maybe I should have. But I'm thinking that just, you know, given the public interest, the individual, there was one individual wrote in about that, and I think that it's probably worthy just for us comments to respond to that inquiry and clarification on this administrative decision. Whitney, do you mind making a comment on that?
I see. So just questions about, you'd like me to kind of reiterate the questions we received on that decision and provide
I just think in the interest of an individual from the public wrote into the city saying, hey, I've got questions about this particular, it wasn't the decision as much, is that apparently it appeared around the ownership of the property, and they had some questions about vacation rentals themselves, and just the fact that you received that inquiry, we got copies of the inquiry, you responded to us. There may be people out there that are listening that are not aware of that, but I just think in the spirit of keeping that transparent, spending 30 seconds sharing some of the comments, and, you know, how you address those questions by that person in the community might be helpful at this time.
Sure thing. So hopefully Patrick and Andrew are here too, and if I miss something, hopefully they can chime in. So I believe one of the questions was around who owned the property and whether somebody can apply for a vacation rental permit, a permit to use a home as a vacation rental if they're not actually the owner of the property. In this instance, the applicant was the owner. It was just that the existing assessor's records hadn't caught up to the fact that the property sold back in October. It typically takes a few months for...
I think Whitney froze up for some reason. She's frozen out at this point.
I may be able to help finish that one.
Thank you.
As she mentioned, the property was sold back in October. there is not anything within the municipal code that would prevent investment property from being used as a vacation rental, which was one of the questions. But I think in this case there was a little bit of confusion thinking that it was owned by an LLC, assuming that was the case. There was also a question that was asked about what is the required distance between vacation rentals. Per the ordinance, it is required that 300 feet are between any two permitted vacation rentals or homestays. And we also were able to share the project file with the individual asking.
Very good. If nothing more, it will help educate the community that these things are looked at from time to time if inquiries are made. The staff does respond to those kinds of things, and we're certainly not trying to keep any of that information from what's going on. And I, for my take, please correct me if I miss it. We do have a number of these vacation rentals within the community, but we don't have an unusual desire or request to create a large number of them where they've really made a significant impact in our community. Is that correct? We see them from time to time, but we're not being flooded with applications. We're not flooded with vacation rentals in our community, at least at this point in time.
I would say that's accurate. Last time when we examined the vacation rental ordinance, it was kind of a surprise to some to see how few we actually had. I would say the numbers in the order of about 100 total throughout the city out of over 6,700 properties.
A number that are not licensed or registered within the city, but those that we know about and those that are functioning are modest in number and appropriate given the size of our community. Anyway, thank you. I don't want to belabor that point, but I thought since there was community curiosity and interest in that item that it was worth sharing that with the community again at this point. As we finish up the meeting tonight under commission communications, I just want to say it's great to see everybody as remotely as we end up having to see everybody at this point in time, but it's good to see smiling faces that we haven't seen for a while. It's good to get back. Let's just hope that 2021 we start seeing meetings on a little more regular basis and can have agendas that are handled and managed as we come up upon literally just a single hour. Happy New Year's to everybody. Any other commission comments made before we go on to the staff and close this meeting? Very good, thank you. Staff, any kind of closing comments or communications for the commission and the public here tonight?
Not much from me this evening. I echo the comments about good to see everybody and happy new year, and look forward to continuing our work together over the next year. And I'm here if there's any questions. I guess I'll let you know that you will be hopefully meeting a new community development director at your first meeting in February. So that's our goal currently.
Excellent. That's good to hear. With nothing else going, this meeting is hereby adjourned. It's 6:59. We were able to pull it off in 59 minutes tonight. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you for participating. That was a daunting package that we received from the city. Happy New Year. We'll see you at the next meeting. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Everybody, see you later.